Available with financing terms you can't beat. For more information, contact the official HVAC company of the morning after, Design Air Heating and Cooling, at designair.net. Shop local for all of your medical and sanitation supply needs with family-owned St. Louis staple, Bertarelli Cutlery and Supply. Work with Marco and his family directly, and they will handle your order. Masks, hand sanitizer, sanitizing wipes, disposable gloves, thermoscanners, and more. Everyone is getting back to work, and Bertarelli Cutlery can customize your plexiglass dividers for your workplace. Contact Marco directly by emailing marco@bertarellico.com or calling 314-323-0712, and he will take your order and take care of you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Jansen, and I'm here with Gray from Dents Express, St. Louis's premier paintless dent repair facility with two locations, Baldwin and St. Charles. Hey Gray, what exactly is paintless dent repair?
Great question, Cam. Paintless dent repair is the process of removing dings and dents without having to repaint your vehicle. It enables you to keep your original finish and also your factory warranty.
St. Louis, for all your dings and dents, contact my good friends at Dents Express, 636-227-5050, DentsExpressSTL.com.
This is Mariah, third generation at Neustetter's Fine Jewelry. Buying an engagement ring can be intimidating. At Neustetter's, we ensure complete understanding of your purchase. We offer a choice in both lab and mine-grown diamonds and are able to work with any budget. Let our family help educate you on your choice at Big Ben and Doherty Ferry or at wowdiamonds.com.
The Village Bar is open Monday through Sunday, noon to 8 p.m. for curbside pickup, and the dining room is now open. Get a couple burgers for yourself, or their quart-sized chili is perfect to feed the entire family. Located at 12247 Manchester Road in De Pere. To order, call 314-821-4532.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-patter? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on the rail. But I'm not afraid. This rover.
Oh, squiggly line in my eye fluid. I see you there lurking on the periphery of my vision. But when I try to look at you, you scurry away. Are you shy, squiggly line? Why only when I ignore you do you return to the center of my eye? Oh, squiggly line, it's all right. You are forgiven.
Crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
Let the silence scare you. We're here.
Whoa.
I know for a moment there, you folks thought, oh, no, they're not there.
Man.
The show is gone. Nah.
Huh?
It's here. It's here this week. It's on this week. Good afternoon, everybody. How you doing? Welcome to the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on this, the 9th of September. Another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
It was a 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
I missed it. Okay, so I missed it.
Last week.
Welcome aboard, everybody. We'll do the Burke segment. We'll take your calls. Dr. Doug will be in next hour, as he is every Wednesday. You know how that works. If you have a pet or you're thinking about getting a pet, but you want an expert opinion as to whether or not that would be the pet for you and your family, he's the guy. Of course, you already have a pet, and you love the pet, as pet owners do. He's also the guy. He's a terrific vet, and he'll be here in the 4 o'clock hour after we check in with John Landolf. I got a couple of things today to go over with you, but before we do that, does anybody have anything to say?
I do not today.
No, not really.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, sorry.
Did you get, before Bill gets here,
right.
did you like that game yesterday?
I did. Yeah. I liked it.
It was fun trying to, like, fool Dan into sounding, like, into making something outrageous sound professional or, like,
yeah,
true, you know?
It was fun, I think, once. Maybe down the road another time. I wouldn't want to do it every week. I it was different.
Maybe not every week.
Oh, not every week.
Maybe shook once it up a month or something.
Right? See, I like the games, when Bill does the games where you know that people listening are sitting out there going, say lettuce, for goodness sakes. You know, give me all the things in the grocery store, eight things that start with L. Right. I like those.
I think people were trying to play along yesterday, too, figure out who was,
who was telling the truth and who was wrong. Because some of those, I mean, even I was a little bit confused, and I was sitting in the room with the other two, and I didn't know who was telling the truth and who was lying.
So we did a good job.
I mean, I think we did a very good job.
Not a bad game at all. I don't know that I'd want to play it every week. So nobody has anything for the Burke segment.
Well, I do quickly.
Tim Woodburn, everybody, hey. Welcome.
The game yesterday that Bill played was an on air version of Balderdash.
Oh,
and Balderdash. And if you look at the rules, I think it could be a fun game I think it could be more fun of a game if it were tweaked just a tad.
Yeah.
Instead of tweaked in the way that Balderdash was intended to be played, where one guy, you know, has, and there's some prep involved, where one guy has a phrase and then he gives you three guesses as to what it is. One is real, two that he's made up, and he has to sell. And you know, and you have to guess which one of the three that it really is. Or there's a reverse way to do it, where everybody tries to guess which one is right, and you gain a point or you lose a point, or you know, that type of thing.
So I think Bill knows that he missed something, because he was in here in my studio and he was just kind of going through things, and he went, "Oh no!" And he was trying to figure it out, so he did the best he could with it.
You know what,
right,
though, and in his
tweaking it for radio, it,
but in his defense, even if he stumbled with that thing, I got to tell you, Bill Clevelin has come. I hope he's not listening. He has come so far from Dan when you and I first had him working with us, and he was doing basically monologue jokes.
Yeah,
I think his contribution to this show has become very significant, and I like what Bill does. And as long as we're going down this road, let me say this: I've always had the ability to, to do it very objectively, determine when what we're doing on the air is listenable or not listenable. I've always known when a show was just went flat. Nothing happened in 3 hours that was something anybody would talk about. But for the most part, in 3 weeks, we will have been here 3 years. We start our fourth year here. I'll just tell you, folks, I never expected this to go beyond 18 months. I just didn't.
Right.
It just didn't feel like it was going to happen. But it did. And I will just share with you my thoughts about the show. And granted, even though it's coming from me, and most people in radio, whoever they are, think that whatever they're doing is just great. I don't. I've not thought that whatever I did was great, but I do have the ability, and I always have had the ability, to dissect it and look at it the way a listener would, or not look literally, but listen. This show, as it is right now, even though the players have changed over the years, to me is probably as easy a show to listen to, as enjoyable a show to listen to, as entertaining a show to listen to as I've ever been part of. And it's because it works with Limey, it works with Tim, and it works with Dan, it works with Bill, it works with the other part-time players, Dan Buffa, Josh Bauman. Everything seems to be clicking. So to you guys, I say, way to go. I mean, it was a rocky start. I didn't know if everybody in here would continue to be in here. But like a lot of things, if you give it time, things find their places. They settle in. Tim Woodburn had never even heard what I do. He didn't have any idea what this show was. Now imagine.
Right.
Imagine anybody going to pick a town, Fort Smith, Arkansas, and you're plopped into a station, you know, it's the Ernie Sanders Show with Ernie and the gang, and you don't have any idea who anybody is, who any of the players are, what any of the bits are. Why did you play that sound effect? What does that mean? That was Tim. And it took about a year and a half. And now I believe that not only does he get it, I think he has a good time sitting in here every day. I know you had to step out, but I'm talking about you. I think it's fun. I've said many times, I come in here, this is my break for the day. Prior to coming in here today, it was just another day of a bunch of BS and things to deal with. And then I get in here, and it's like stepping over to the next door neighbor's house, and another neighbor comes over, and you're sitting around, and you're just talking. That's kind of what it is. So it works. The other thing that I want to make sure the listeners that you understand is, if, and don't try to read too much into this, but in the event that this show would go away, you need to know that you will not be left in the dark. You will not be out of touch with us. That Facebook page will still be up. And if you go to facebook.com/AM and the PM, I will personally be on there telling you exactly what's going on and what happened. And again, don't read too much into that. But you need to know that's where, you know how they do the emergency action. Had this been an actual alert, you would have been instructed.
Right.
It's kind of like that. You're instructed, if that would happen, to go to facebook.com/AM and the PM. And there you'll find the answers to your questions. So it works. I feel very comfortable in saying I don't think there is another show in this town or in many towns that has, one, as loyal a following, two, is as easy to listen to. This show, I'm sure that really, really super bright, intelligent people would find this show ridiculous and boring. You know, some geophysicist, what the heck am I listening to?
I don't.
Actually, that was funny. That was funny. Give him a rim shot. That was funny.
It's to the point, Limey, where when Dan says something, and you and I both do the same thing, we kind of give Frank the look of, is it okay to laugh?
Yeah, right. What are we doing now?
I'm stopping that right now. If I think Dan's funny, I'm just
go
laughing.
For it.
Just go for it.
You don't need my approval.
Why not?
You don't need my approval. So that's it. 3 years is coming up, and October 2nd. Will be the official beginning of the fourth year. I'd like to think there'll be a fourth year, but I got to tell you, this show goes, I want to say week to week. It's actually every 2 weeks to 2 weeks, because my deal is 2 weeks notice. So we'll get 2 weeks notice, or we'll give them 2 weeks notice. But so far, so good. We can always use more business, more advertisers, and I'm not sure I've ever understood why a business, anybody who owned a business or was responsible for advertising, who knows how hard it is to track advertising, find out whether or not you're getting your money's worth. I never understood why the people who I know their businesses have the money wouldn't want to talk about doing something that a number of advertisers have done for years and years and years, and that's beyond this show. They're not stupid, you know. First Community Credit Union, Johnny Londoff, Complete Auto Body, Bertarelli, those people aren't stupid. They're going to throw money away. There's a reason they're here. And the reason is, given time, a reasonable amount of time for it to work, it works. And it works because this audience is very loyal to this show. So thank you. Thank you, everybody in the room and behind that glass and everybody listening. And we'll just keep plugging away as long as we can. Now, since nobody has anything for the Burke segment except Tim, is that it for you?
This is one of those, Limey asked me how I was doing today, and the first word out of my mouth was, I'm poor. I'm going through a moving process, and it seems like every day I'm writing a check to somebody else for something else. I had to go rent a second storage facility today. I had to go back to Home Depot to buy 41 more hinges that I forgot to buy. I had to pay a contractor almost $800 to install a suddenly broken garage door motor that I don't know if it can be repaired or not, but he insisted it couldn't.
So what you're doing is the things that I guess either a realtor or you decided need to be done to make this house. Well,
exactly. You know, my realtor, is female. She's a great gal. But she loved, nothing makes her happier than to walk through the house saying, you need to do this.
Right.
Ching, you need to do this. Ching, you need to do this. Ching. I mean, and she's just nonstop. She's like a kid. She's like a 12-year-old with an Amex Black Card at the Galleria. You need these new cabinets. You need this painted. You need this remodeled. You need this landscaping done. You need this. You want to get top price, don't you? Well, is spending all this money really going to get me more money for the house? Yes, it will. Of course they're going to tell you. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right. It will, but you know what? If you
not
get
their
out of
money.
It, yeah, if you get out of it now and you take a little less, then the people that come in and buy the house because they can upgrade.
Here's the
everything.
Thing: people seem to forget you don't have to do. You can sell a house as is.
I know
you can.
I know.
Whenever I have to sell, I'm going to have to make a decision. How much of this stuff that the real estate agent says you need to do this, need to do that, how much do I want to do, and how much of it do I go? You know what? Let them put new carpet in, and they put the carpet they like in here.
It's actually causing me to physically change from the neck up, because I'll wake up at 4:30 in the morning and I cannot go back to sleep because my mind is racing with everything I still need to do. And I can't. I try and block it out. I try and concentrate on something else, think about whatever, and I can't.
I think you got to split the difference. You got to split the difference between what they say you should do and what you know the new people can do.
Right.
Okay, I'll shave $10,000 off the price, and you fix, get new curtains.
We had a neighbor. Our neighbor just sold their condo, and their condo sold like almost immediately.
Yeah.
They got their asking price, and the people, pardon me.
You okay?
And the people that came in and bought the place ended up putting new carpeting in,
right.
Ended up going in and doing all of this other stuff that they wanted done. Right. And they really didn't do anything to the condo to upgrade it or do anything.
That's my daughter and her husband, just they bought a house a few months ago. It's exactly what the sellers did. They just went, well, here it is. Here's the price. The carpet was disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Peeling paint outside and in, chipped, dog and chewed the wood. Well, here it is.
Right.
Well, they got a pretty good price, and they knew the reason was now, and they've been working, like you said, they've been working on this thing for 3 months. Mm-hmm. It's never ending. New carpet, paint this, fix that, new this. But when it's done, and it's almost all done, it's exactly what they want. And to me, that's a lot better than going in a house where, well, it's brand new carpet, but I hate it.
Right.
I'd rather do it myself.
And there's aggravating things that go, like, for example, I'm done moving. So I called a moving company today, and I went through the whole 10-minute application process of who I am and where I live and where I want to go. And I was literally listing the items. I said, I don't have that many items left to move, ma'am. I got about 15 large items I still need to move. They're too big for me to move by myself. Well, let's go through them room by room, and let's see what they are so I can give you a bid over the phone. I go through this whole process, and at the end of all this, which was about a 20-minute conversation, 20 minutes of my life I'll never get back, I might add. Now, your guys are going to be able to disassemble my treadmill in the basement and bring it up in two pieces, right? Because it won't fit up the steps. Oh, no, we can't do that for liability reasons.
What?
What?
You guys can disassemble my washer and dryer from the outlets and the, oh, no, we can't do that. There's liability.
Liability
what?
Reasons.
Can you at least take down my wall-mounted TVs because my arm's too fat?
You have a gas dryer or electric?
It's electric.
Well, I don't get where the liability is.
Just unplug it. The liability, I guess, no, in the case they break it.
The washing machine with the hose lines and the water and the...
It's in case they break it.
I guess.
I'm guessing so then they don't have to cover it.
Well, and my brother, who's moved 4 times in the last 5 years... You know, and has paid out of pocket. I think he paid $10,000 one time for a move. They disassembled all of his gym equipment, you know, and then put it back together in pieces, put it back together for him. I told him that. I said, my brother has a company that does this. Well, different companies have different policies.
Oh, man.
I'm
right.
Just like, oh, my God.
And going back to the house, to fixing everything up, if I'm going to fix everything up in the house, I'm going to stay. Then it's like you look at the kitchen, you look at the bathroom, you look at the new carpet.
Isn't that something? You do all that stuff for somebody else.
Yeah.
but you lived in it with all, with it needing all that stuff. This is weird.
Oh, I go through that. It's like breaking up with a girl. No. Should I? Shouldn't I? Should I? Shouldn't
I? Maybe I'll stay here now. Kind of like what I did.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously.
No, I stay.
I've dated it.
This weekend we had a couple come in from out of town. We've known them forever, and she's a real estate agent. She's only been a real estate agent for about 4 years. And I've told you before how I feel about realtors. There's some really good ones, but there are too many realtors. Too many. And a lot of them have no business being realtors. It's like a hobby or a part-time job or whatever. Yeah. And they're not that good at it. Some are. She's telling me about the backstabbing internal. Realtors can be nasty to other realtors. Yeah. Oh. Stealing. I showed them that house last year. That's my plan. That kind of crap.
Right.
You owe me 2% of that. Holy mackerel. And then there's the selling agent.
We're talking about money, isn't it?
And the agent for the buyer, and then the mothership, whether it's Remax, Coldwell Bank, they take this chunk, you get this chunk as the seller's agent. By the time it's over, sometimes there's not that much left for the agents.
I've got a great story for you. And it involves what you're talking about with a little sidestep. It involves the car business. I'd love to actually ask Londoff this question.
Well, he'll be on today.
Probably off air, I'd like to ask, because I'll probably get a better story off air. Although he might be able to clean it up on air.
Oh, I have a story, too.
My dad sold cars for 40 years in various dealerships. And the way that car salesmen split commission on a deal, let's say, Frank, you go into Londoff and you talk to salesperson A. Yeah, you wishy-washy. Let me think about it. 3 days later, you go back in, you talk to salesperson B.
Because maybe that other guy is off that day.
Or, exactly. And you have to talk to the salesperson because A's off.
Right.
Well, A calls you back, and then you don't buy the car that second day. Well, A calls you back, and you're like, well, I'm going to come in Friday and make the buy. And A's going to say, listen, I can't stand B. When you come in, I want you to ask for C, because he and I are buddies, all right? And then what happens is the car gets sold, and B shows up and is like, hey, I met with that guy, took him on 3 test drives, where's my cut? And A says to B, me and C are splitting the deal, you're out. And wow. and it gets nasty because salespeople in the car business form at most dealerships, and I don't know if dealerships are like that way then, maybe there's three-way splits now, but back then, it was first guy to talk to him, last guy to talk to him, no matter how much work the middle guy did, middle guy's out. Or middle girl, for that matter.
Wow.
And it caused fist fights, it caused people to get fired, police got called. I mean, my dad could go on and on and on about those stories, but car salesmen are vicious to each other.
Dan, you sold cars.
I sold cars for 6 months in between radio jobs. And it's a family-owned business, which, by the way, I would never, ever buy a car from this family in my entire life, even if they were the...
Now you're getting an email. Everybody go, who is it?
I know.
He's not going to tell you.
No, I will not tell you. But they do have a lot of dealerships, but I won't tell you who it is.
Well, that narrows it down to about six.
I know. Right. I know. But the guys that own our family, and they are... were the biggest jerks I'd ever worked for. And everybody there was all about, they weren't about making the people happy. Londoff is about making people happy. These guys were about screwing people. And they would come out and one of the managers, they said, if you can't get this deal done, we don't want anybody leaving the lot. And when I let somebody leave the lot one time. They said, well, I was going to check here. I said, go ahead. And they go, but we'll be back. And they said, Dan Strauss, come to the office. So I come to the office. What are you doing letting those people leave? I'm like, well, they didn't want to stay.
You're supposed to tie them up?
Yeah, right. They didn't want to stay. Oh, no, you have to have somebody else come and help. Well, one of the other sales guys would come over and say, he's my manager, and what can he do? You know, basically, what can I do to put you in this car? Wow. So... they would get mad at me all the time for letting people leave, and then they would come back and they actually bought a car from me, and I would turn around and look at them. They hated that. But one time, and this, the one of the finance guys was a brother-in-law, and I sold a car completely at sticker price. These people came in and they didn't care, they just wanted to buy a car. They bought it at sticker, so I was going to get a good commission. Then they went in to finance, and they actually bought extra
extended
warranty. Yeah, extended warranty and all this other stuff. And
all they, that add-on stuff yeah. that's very profitable.
Yes, right. they did. They bought all of this add-on stuff, which I'm supposed to get commission on. And I ended up thinking, man, I'm going to get a big check. And somebody comes out and says, you had to split the deal. I said, split the deal with who? Split the deal with their brother-in-law in finance.
Who's not even in sales.
No, he's not even in sales because he's the one that helped sell the extended warranty and helped sell all this other stuff. And it was like, screw you people.
Years ago, what I'm about to tell you, I'm pretty sure doesn't exist anymore because I think it probably is illegal.
Right.
But a long time ago, I knew a guy, and he was a salesman at a car dealership. And I don't know why I was there right as they were closing. I don't remember the circumstances, but I remember that he said, let me show you something. And he took me over to one of the sales cubicles where the person sits with the customer. There was a microphone under the desk. Whoa. So that the sales manager could hear every deal that was being worked by every salesman. Wow. He could at any time tap in, and I thought, that doesn't seem...
It's a bit invasive.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right, because if the manager hears that it's going sideways, all of a sudden this guy's phone would ring, and right there with the customer, he'd go, yeah. He goes, excuse me, you guys, I got to be right back. And he's going down the hall, so the manager goes, you better not let these people get away. You should never have told them, Bob, now you get back over there and you tell them. There was something about that that just bothered me. Now, I don't think that exists anymore. I don't think it could. But that's, you talk about pressure. Here are two situations that I used to hate. One, you walk into, and it doesn't have to be a car dealer. It could be any store, furniture store, and immediately somebody's on you. Hi, they got, I mean, you could tell, right. What do they call it, Dan? This, he's your up.
You're up.
He's yeah. your up. So yeah. Tim walks in. It's my turn. He's my up. Yeah. I get the next guy that walks in. Well, I'm all over him. And they walk with you and follow you around. Even if you say, yeah, I just like to look. Well, let me show you. No, I just like to look around.
Don't leave you alone.
That I always hated. But here's the other one I hated. You walk in someplace and nobody waits on you. Nobody.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually you just have to go, can somebody help me? I don't like either one of those.
When I had my extensive, and I mean extensive, door-to-door knife salesman training at Cutco, they would...
You have something like a diploma or something that shows that you were trained to sell knives?
Yeah. No.
Because you could use that at Bertarelli, I bet, get a job.
The way they trained you to do the reverse Jedi mind trick on the customer.
It was the cutting edge of training.
Pretty good, Dan. You're on today.
2-0, Dan. They would train you to say about every 5 minutes, so far, does this sound like something you'd be interested in?
Oh.
And then you do a little more magic. Does this sound like something you're going to be interested in? And you're getting people to say to themselves in their mind, yes, this is something that sounds like I might be interested in. And most of the time, people were just saying it to be polite
yeah.
because I'm 17 and they're 45. And
right.
They already know they're not going to buy, but they don't have the chutzpah to kick the 17-year-old out in the middle of the sales presentation, which the reverse of that is the 17-year-old I was at the time thinks, I'm doing a great job. Boy, I'm doing great. Boy, I'm getting all the buying signals. I'm getting all the buying vibes. Yep. So, Mr. Pinion, that concludes my presentation. What would you like to buy today?
Yeah, no.
I think I'm going to pass, but thanks for your time.
Let me think about it.
Yeah. All right.
Now, you know, I really enjoy talking about jobs that, you know, I had or hearing about jobs that other people had. And I'm a pretty good salesman, okay? I used to work in a furniture store. It's where I met my wife. And I love my boss. He was just the greatest guy. But I was frustrated because I was putting dinette sets together with a drill back in the back. Unloading trucks, it was dirty, it was hot, there was no air conditioning, no heat, and I would look out around through the glass in the sales department, and I looked at those people, dressed
you're
nice,
sitting there relaxing.
Not sweating. Well, right. Not necessarily relaxing, but they were waiting on people and getting more money because they got a commission. And I'm thinking, I'm an hourly, I'm never ever going to do better unless I just work more hours. Right. So I went to my boss one day and I said, look what I brought to work with me. And I showed him on a hanger, shirt, tie, and a pair of pants. And I said, I thought maybe like if when I finish my shift today, I could go change. I'd like to sell. No. He says, I need you back there. I said, no, I'll still put the dinette sets together. I'll still do all that. I would like an opportunity to make some extra money. I think I could do a selling. So, what makes you think you can sell? I said, I know I can sell.
Right.
And I had to work him. And after a while, he said, well, let's give it a try. It lasted a day, and here's why. I went, I changed, I put on my tie, and a couple came in looking at a rocker. It's a rocker, like you rock a baby.
Right.
And they liked it. And they said, we'll take it. And I said, oh, okay. I said, let me go back in the back and check our inventory. And they said, no, we want this one, because we sat in there. We'll just take the one right off the floor. And I said, You don't want that one. And they said, why? And I said, look, I work in the back in the warehouse, and that chair came in and it was cracked, and we repaired it and we glued it. Actually just glued it back together. Now it's gonna hold. It's a strong, but I think you should know that chair came in damaged. The next thing I hear is it's my boss around the corner. He goes, can I speak for a second? And he said, what are you doing?
Oh, man.
And I said, he said, let me tell you something. They said, we'll take this chair. I said, yeah, but I just think it's right. He goes, take your tie off. That's it. You're done. Wow. I never got just to make one sale just because I was trying to be honest with these people.
And I guess you can't do that in sales.
Well, they may very well have said, well, thank you for being honest. I sure it'll hold up fine. Because sometimes when you repair something, it's actually stronger. Yeah, it's like welding. Your weld was better than the original weld. Nah, that was it.
This one day in sales you worked at this furniture company, was this one day before or after the day that same boss made you kick in somebody's door and repossess furniture while they weren't home?
Oh, he didn't make me kick in anybody's door. I had to go along with another truck driver. Well, he's the one who broke in and got the furniture.
Well, you both did. You're both guilty by conspiracy. Yeah. I'm just saying, was this before or after your one day as a salesman?
This was after. No. The sales thing came after the repossession.
Oh, okay. So repo, then sales.
Repo, then sales.
Got it. Yeah. So, again, on my car days when I was selling for those 6 months, I brought my Billy Bob teeth in. And I would walk. I would walk up behind the people, and I had my teeth in.
For people who don't know what Billy Bob teeth are, they are very real looking rotten teeth that you put over your teeth.
Aren't they on our Facebook page on the Balance Dental?
Yeah. And it looks just like you haven't seen the dentist your whole life.
Yeah.
Brown and green, ugly, rotted teeth.
Overbite.
And I walked up to them, and they were just kind of standing there looking at a car, and I said, you know, all I need to do is sell one more car, and I can go to the dentist and get my teeth fixed.
See, I think that's so funny. I would have bought the car from you right then. I just said, I love this guy.
Oh, that's funny.
They turned around, and more times than not, I sold the car.
Yeah.
But then, once the owner figured out what was going on, Dan Strauss, come to the office. So I was constantly being paged. But he says, leave those teeth at home. Aww. I'm like, they're working. Right. I said the teeth work.
No, they got no time for those shenanigans.
Leave the teeth at home. It's like, okay.
You know, I've never been fired in my life. I have never been called in and somebody said, you're fired. Never. Yeah. I've had stations that were sold. They were bought. I quit jobs to go to other, but I've never actually gotten the, you're fired.
Oh.
And I don't know that that's good. I think people should get fired.
I got fired from a Subway once.
What'd you do there? Fix sandwiches?
Yeah, just made sandwiches. I got fired after 10 days. I think I shouted at the manager, if I remember correctly. They wanted me to go out there and wipe tables or something. I don't know if it was like a power play in front of everybody else, but there was no empty tables for me to wipe down. Everybody was like sitting in them and eating. So I said, what are you stupid? What do you want me to do? Go and wipe around people eating? And then next thing you know, the owner called me upstairs to his office and was like, all right, well, you know, Thanks for the day.
Are you crazy? $5 foot long?
I once got fired from the same job twice.
By the way, I love these stories. Go ahead.
As you used to proclaim earlier in my tenure in the show, I used to be a roller skating rink DJ. And I got fired from that job twice by two different sets of owners. The first time I got fired was because after about a year, this very, very heavy set girl who worked in the snack bar came up to me and criticized my choice of selections that of music that I was playing for the big Friday night crowd, which is where they lined up outside the door.
The big Friday night crowd. Yeah. See what she did there.
And I said to her, and I don't remember her name, but I wasn't in a good mood, and I said to her, I said, why don't you just shut up and turn around, go back to the snack bar, and drink another can of nacho cheese?
I didn't
call her fat. I didn't call her.
Well, you didn't have to. In fact, you'd been better off if you probably
did. So she went to it was a husband wife tandem that managed the facility. And she says, did you just, and she was crying in the snack bar. Mm-hmm. She said, did you say that to her?
Crying eating nachos.
And I said, well, yeah, I did, but she left her work area to come criticize me. Why aren't you disciplining her? She left her work area. I didn't. She invaded my space. They said, well, that's enough. We're not going to allow that type of abuse. You can go.
But you were actually able to get a job again there?
They sold the facility to another husband-wife tandem who came in and ran the facility.
Did they hire a thinner girl at the snack bar?
She was not working there anymore.
Did the new owners know you'd been fired from there before?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep, they did. Because I played roller hockey there on Sunday nights. I played in the league. I was allowed to still come in and play. I just couldn't work there. So another husband and wife comes in, and I got along with them great at first, but then the husband ran the show. His name was Ted, and his wife Andy, she'd come in one or two days and just kind of make little constructive criticism things, but she really wasn't involved in the day to day.
You're saying it was a husband and wife, and the husband made the decisions and was in charge in that marriage. Yeah.
The husband had to work every day, 7 days a week, while she sat at home and ate bonbons and watched soap operas. And she came in one day and she said something along the lines of, I was playing roller hockey, and she said something along the lines of, you guys need to get off the floor because we're going to be cleaning. And I don't know, she said we had rented the floor. Okay, I was with a fraternity, and we had rented the floor, and we wanted our full 2 hours. And she told us that we were going to have to leave 15 minutes early for them to clean and not get our full 2 hours in. And in a temporary fit of rage and anger used to have, I wound up and I shot the puck at her, and I whizzed it by her head, and I missed her by about 2 inches.
Oh, boy.
Her, and it hit. The popcorn machine in the snack bar and cracked the window on her.
She fired me for that. She fired me for that.
What's wrong with that?
I said to her, I could see you fire me if I hit you. I didn't even realize you were there. Lie. I didn't know you were standing there. Lie. What are you firing me for? She
should have praised you for having a great shot.
Yeah.
Man.
One of my favorite stories, you don't have kids, but when your kids get older, and when Theo gets older, he's going to want to hear about when you were his age. And then when he's a little older, he's going to still want to hear about your first job. And one of my favorite stories, because I'm not ashamed of it, is I grew up in a house where you didn't talk about stuff. There was no talk about sex. Right. The word condom never came up. There were just certain things that were so personal and private that even your own parents didn't talk to you about it. So there's a lot of stuff as a little dumb Tennessee hick kid that I didn't know. I worked at a store called I was 15. I worked at a store called the Golden Rule Five and Dime Store. Dan, there used to be Ben Franklin.
Yeah.
There was Woolworths. These were all what they call Five and Dime Stores. Okay, because there was a lot of stuff in there for a nickel and a dime, and it was just affordable stuff. So I worked at the Golden Rule, and I put tricycles together. I bagged up the candy. I weighed it on a scale, and I would get a little pound bag of candy, chocolate-covered almonds or whatever, and I'd price them with a pricing machine. I had a lot of stuff. I was kind of a stock boy. And all the stock was upstairs. There were stair steps behind the store, and up above were all the inventory. Everything we carried, if you need more of it, you go upstairs to the stock room and get it. And Mr. Rossmeyer, my boss, who always had a pipe in his mouth, always. Smoked a pipe constantly. Even when it wasn't lit, he had it in his mouth. He said, I've told this before, but I love to tell it. He said, I want you to run upstairs and get me a box of sanitary napkins. I came down with a giant box of Scott's picnic napkins in colors, pink. You know those picnic things?
Yeah.
Yellow, pink, and green. And I'm cutting them open with a box cutter, and he said, what are you doing? Why? I said, you wanted sanitary napkins. He said, yeah, I wanted sanitary napkins. I said, these are sanitary. They're still in the box. I said, they're not just in the box. Each pack is in plastic. How could they be more sanitary? And he said, how old are you? And I said, I'm 15, Mr. Rossmeyer. And he said, let's go upstairs. So he walks me upstairs and goes over to the Kotex section, which I had never paid any attention to.
Right. Why would you?
He said, son, these are sanitary napkins. And then I said, so they're cleaner than the ones? He said, no. He said, look, I'm not kidding. I was so dense. It took me a while. And then he said something like, no, these are for women. And I said, so women use a different napkin? And I'm thinking just napkin than a guy? Why? I mean, they're just napkins. He said, look, he opens the box. He takes one out. He said, this, they wear these. He said, are you seriously telling me that you don't know? I said, I have no idea what you're talking
about. Where do they wear them?
Yeah, well, I'm surprised I didn't ask that. And I said, I don't know. I've never heard of these. He said, when women have their monthly thing, I did kind of know what that was, they wear sanitary napkins. So the next time I tell you to get sanitary napkins, I don't mean picnic napkins, I mean these. Now, here's the confusing part.
And Frank says, sanitary napkins that one time a month, why would they need to wipe their mouth?
So it gets more confusing because they have maxi and something regular, and then there's like eight different
super max.
Yeah, what in the, I don't know what that
pontoons
means.
And maxi buckets and all kinds of stuff.
Now that was about, I think, when tampons were introduced, because the world, women didn't have tampons till, I don't know, like the 50s, I don't think.
I don't know.
And then that's a whole other confusing thing. They do what with those? But I'll never forget that day and the sanitary napkin story, because it's just one of those. There's certain things that when you learn them, you never, not only do you not forget what they are, you never forget the circumstance, because when you're 15, you like to impress the boss and you like to act like you can do anything and you know anything. And when you're called out as being an idiot for something, man, it's just devastating.
I think you'll enjoy this. The tampon was invented in 1929.
Okay.
And according to feminternational.org, before the disposable pad was invented, most women used rags, cotton, or sheep's wool in their underwear to stem the flow of menstrual blood. Knitted pads, rabbit fur, even grass were used by women to handle
grass.
Hold on.
Grass.
Wow.
That doesn't go there.
Honey, when you cut the lawn, bag it up and bring it to the bathroom.
Yeah. I just started.
Tape me up a couple balls of grass.
Yeah. Wow.
Man.
Sorry, ladies. Over. We're not being disrespectful. We're just sharing with you how ignorant we were. Or I was, anyway. And
wasn't it Kathy Rigby? Was she the one that did
the
tampons?
Very
and she
good.
Said you could horseback ride, and she did all kinds of stuff.
No, I believe it was Kathy Rigby. And then,
that's a good joke, actually, as well.
Yeah.
Mr. Rossmeyer also was the guy who gave me the opportunity to sell popcorn on the corner, right on the corner of two streets with a real full-size popcorn machine. Man, I loved that. It smelled good. And then I thought, I asked him, can I get three popcorn? He said, knock yourself out, eat all you want. Let me tell you something. If you ever get a job where ice cream and you get to eat all you want, after about 3 days, you are, one, probably sick because you ate too much. And then there's a period where you never want to see it again as long as you live, because you
overindulge.
You overdid it.
Tampax's new spokesman as of July of this year is Amy Schumer.
Really?
I thought you were going to say she's Caitlyn Jenner.
No, she's doing comedy commercials about him. So they're trying to inject a little comedy.
Why not? Why not have fun with something that is so hard to talk about? Yeah. Now we're late, so I got to do some business, and we can close the Burke segment. There wasn't a whole lot there. Bertarelli. See, that's the Italian spin. That's with the Italian accent. And I know that that is accurate and correct because Marco Bertarelli told me so. But we'll just say Bertarelli because that's what most people say. They're in the cutlery business. And that's what most people know them for until they decided to use this show to inform the world that they were also in the personal protective equipment business. And apparently we're doing a pretty good job of letting people know that because they're getting huge orders from school districts, from hospitals, from restaurants, cafeterias, anywhere that people need masks, plexiglass panels, face shields, hand sanitizer, pump bottles, spray bottles, isolation gowns. You get the picture. All of that is in their warehouse. So if you need a mask, or 10 masks, or one face shield, or 1,000, or 1,000,000 masks. If you think I'm just saying 1,000,000 in some sort of exaggerated way, since they've been on with us, I know of an order for 2,000,000 gloves. I'm sorry, gloves, not masks. I know of an order for 3,000,000 gloves, and I think still pending is an order for 4,000,000 gloves. The gloves come 1,000 in a box. And so the first time they told me, well, a listener bought 1,000 boxes of gloves, I didn't really understand how many gloves that was. Well, it's 1,000,000 because they're 1,000 in a box. That's 1,000,000 gloves. That's the kind of inventory that they have, which means your boss should probably fire you if you're the person in charge of acquiring masks or gloves or face shields for your business or your businesses or your school district. You say, well, I'm sorry, there weren't any available, or it's going to be 3 weeks before we get them shipped to us. You should be fired because you don't know the name Bertarelli. If you're AM and the PM, you would. They have a warehouse bursting at the seams with this stuff. Not bursting at the seams because they can't sell them, because they keep replenishing the stock. So whatever you need in the way of personal protective equipment, if it's just for you or you and 1,000 other people, they have it at Bertarelli. And please never, ever, ever forget, they are still all the way in. They're all in with cutlery. They have a nice little retail store. It's a family-owned business, a great St. Louis family business. You can buy a new set of steak knives, or you can take all your knives in there and get them sharpened like they've never been sharpened before. You'll be doing what 1,300 restaurants and kitchens in this town do twice a month. That's where they get their knives sharpened. Bertarelli, cutlery and PPE on the hill on Marconi, 314-323-0712 or bertarellico.com. I got another piece of business. I'll get caught up with that after the top of the hour news break. So here's what happens for the next 2 hours. Dr. Doug Pernikoff, the official veterinarian of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon, your pet's best friend, will be in here after we check in with John Landoff. So please, I'm going to give you the numbers. Please feel free to call. He is the greatest guy to talk to when it comes to your pets. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. And if I were you, I'd call toward the end of the newscast. That way you'll be sure to get in. If you have to hold through Blondoff, so what? Grab a donut or something, and before you know it, you'll be on with Dr. Doug. We are glad you're with us today. We're glad you're with us every day. Thank you for joining us. Stick around. News is next, and I just told you what comes after that. It's 4 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is locally owned 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. KFNS Wood River, St. Louis.
NBC News Radio. I'm Tom Roberts. President Trump is reacting to the release of passages in journalist Bob Woodward's new book, Rage, in which it appears the president knew how deadly COVID-19 was, but decided to try to play it down before the pandemic really hit. Trump spoke at the White House within the hour.
And I don't want people to be frightened. I don't want to create panic, as you say. And certainly I'm not going to drive this country or the world into a frenzy.
Woodward's book is due out next week, and it features several interviews with the president. President Trump is adding 20 names to his original list of potential nominees for the Supreme Court.